You know, it's my great pleasure right now to introduce to everybody a man who really needs no introduction.
Carl.
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 Carl. Dragon.
King.
Carl. I'm not calling the fans geeks. I'm not calling them rednecks, tobacco chewing nothing, because I've done all that myself.
Carl.
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 Carl. Dragon.
King. Carl.
In your dreams, you will see me.
Excuse me, please, let's don't talk negatively.
I'm going to win the title. I'm going to keep my money and buy me some good old Tennessee drinking whiskey with it.
Thank you for being such a great husband.
And this is for you, Fannie Mae. Solid gold, baby, just like you and me.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to When It Was Cool Wrestling. I am Carl Stern. Thank you for joining us here on the Classic Wrestling Audio Show in a rotation of classic wrestling shows. We are back around to our magazine review, where we grab a magazine out of the distant past of pro wrestling back in the days before newsletters so proliferated everything. There were certainly newsletters back then. The Observer's been around since the early 1980s, and there were many, many fanzines before that. But, you know, the readers of those numbered in the dozens. These newsstand magazines were everywhere. Odds are if you had a grocery store, drug store, or discount store in your town, they each had a magazine rack, and they each had sometimes as many as 10 or 12 of these magazines per month on the newsstand. Thousands and thousands of people read these magazines. Their influence is far understated in today's world for just how important they were to the average wrestling fan. Back in the days where cable wasn't that widely available. I mean, cable was only becoming very widespread by the middle to late 1980s. The newsstand magazines is where the average fan found out what was going on in other parts of the country. You got television off a TV antenna back then. This even predated satellites. And, you know, that's how you got your news. Now, mind you, it was kayfabed information, that's to be sure, but you could keep up with where your favorite wrestler was and so forth. And today we're going actually a little bit more modern than we've been doing. We're going to 1990. I've been in kind of a early 1990s mood here lately. It was a kind of a down period for pro wrestling. The NWA Jim Crockett Promotions, what would become WCW, I guess technically was in a lot of ways WCW because Turner had already bought it, had a big peak in the early part of 1989. Throughout 1989, that's when you get the Ricky Steamboat series with Ric Flair. You get the Terry Funk matches that follow that up. But then business really falls off. And into the early 1990s, WCW, NWA was struggling. This is the Bill Hurd era, the Bill Watts era, the Jim Hurd era, the Bill Watts era. That time period where it was looking very iffy. I mean, crowds were way down. Ratings were way down. Things just were not going WCW's way. Now, WWE, WWF at the time stayed a little stronger, a little longer into the early 1990s. But by, 1992, 1993, they too had plummeted in popularity, predicated by a lot of scandals that were going on. There was the Mel Phillips ring boy scandal, and then you had the steroid scandal, Hulk Hogan's disastrous appearance on Arsenio Hall. You had the predication of Vince McMahon's ultimately being indicted for a steroid distribution. You had all that going on, which really impacted WWF's popularity, and it wouldn't be until a few years later before wrestling would rebound. And of course, it rebounded in a huge sort of way, becoming hugely popular. But that doesn't mean the stuff going on was bad around then. In fact, some of it was actually pretty good. I've been revisiting a lot of the WCW stuff from this time period, and it's actually well above what you might think. Now, yes, there were times it struggled, and they were taking some chances, and some of them paid off, some of them didn't. But you had really, I mean, if you go back and look at those rosters, you had guys like Sting and Ron Simmons and Big Van Vader, really good talent there. Lex Luger, you had a lot of good stuff happening, but a lot of your fans from the previous generation Well, you know, Ric Flair was in the on the outs with WCW, ends up leaving, of course, getting into the big argument with Jim Herd and ultimately going to WWF. And so that caused a big backlash against, you know, Lex Luger and those that were there at the time. But that still, there was some good stuff going on, interwoven with some weird stuff as well. So let's go back. We're going to go to 1990 to Inside Wrestling Magazine. This is from the Weston family of magazines. So this is one of the Apter mags, named so-called after Bill Apter, the senior editor and, you know, the guy that takes all those great photographs. You've probably seen some of the most famous photographs in wrestling history are probably either Bill Apter or George Napolitano, who worked for a different group of magazines. But Inside Wrestling, it was probably one of my favorite of the newsstand magazines. Pro Wrestling Illustrated was the kingpin. I mean, no doubt about it. It was the main magazine of the month. But then you had The Wrestler and Inside Wrestling, which were also part of that same family. And I liked Inside Wrestling better because it had that roll call of champions in there. It had the ratings breakdown was a little more significant. All the articles are kayfabed, and, you know, a lot of them are really hit and miss depending on, you know, who your favorites were. And in this time period, let's be honest, this is at the very dying end of the territories. So there's no longer a reason that why you'd, you know, buy the magazines to find out where your favorite person went, you know. So cable is more prolific at this point in time. Satellites are fairly commonplace in America by then. And so you didn't, like, your favorite didn't leave your territory, and you have to get the newsstand magazine to find out where they went, as had been the case 5 or 6 years ago. So the magazines also kind of took a downturn during this time period, and, you know, the 1990s were pretty rough for the newsstand magazines. They would slowly see a deterioration, even by the Monday Night War era, because that's where you have the rise of the internet, right? That's where you have your early days of your internet message boards and stuff like that, America Online news groups and stuff like that, and it starts to really replace the newsstand magazines. And by the early 2000s, they were utterly redundant, and very few have survived. But let's go to January of 1990, Inside Wrestling Magazine. At the very top of the cover, we have, "We found him, the man who can defeat Hulk Hogan." And there's a very bloated-looking Hulk Hogan laying on the mat there with the big blue steel cage in the background. I don't know what match this is taken from, but, you know, Hogan is wearing a little thin by this point in time. It's, you know, his better days as WWF champion are behind him. The prominent cover photo is Sting and a Ric Flair. This looks like an early Photoshop job where they've, you know, cut out a picture of Sting and cut out one of Ric Flair from two different photos and put them both kind of eyeing toward you know, something off page here in the front. And the big banner says, "Why Sting's friendship is tearing Ric Flair apart." So we can, I guess, look forward to a kayfabe article about the that version of the Four Horsemen that's trying to coalesce there in NWA at the time, which ended up being, you know, pretty catastrophic for Sting, actually. Then about the bottom of the page has Jake Roberts versus Ted DiBiase, Cold-Blooded Obsession. So I guess they're working a program there in WWE at the time. And then in your bottom right-hand corner, we get a little bit of what's left of the territories here. Rock and Roll Revival, Morton and Gibson's Incredible Comeback. And then the very bottom one has Jerry Lawler versus Eric Embry, the King of Memphis versus the King of Texas. And USWA is really the one of the last territories there. I think Continental is still going at this point in time, because this would have been, though cover dated January 1990, this would have been covering like September-ish of 1989. So Continental is still around at this point in time, but boy, they're nothing what they once were. The inside front cover, this is great. This is a good bit of nostalgia. This is an advertisement for the LJN wrestling figures from a company called The Wrestling Ring, your official ring wrestling connection. You probably saw this advertisement in there a lot of times. This place was based out of Baltimore, Maryland, and it's got all your or many of your new LJN action figures from WWF. They're only $11.99 each, which is pretty hefty for an immovable plastic statue is what these amounted to. I know LJN has, and Hasbro too, those are the next figures that come out for WWF. I know these have a huge cult following. There's a whole industry in customizing these, 3D printing different heads and making these very good looking little figures. But these were the dirt worst for action figures. These things were immobile. They had zero articulation. They were literally just plastic statues. I know people very fondly remember them, but they were, honest to goodness, let's just be totally honest here, these were the dirt worst action figures. But I see here we've got the Hart Foundation, Jim Neidhart and Bret Hart on there, Coco Ware, complete with Frankie perched on his arm, the Killer Bees, Brian Blair and Jim Brunzel, Kamala, Adrian Adonis, that's a terrible action figure, Outback Jack, King Harley Race, got one of Demolition, looks like Demolition Axe, I don't know why we don't have a Smash. I don't think they ever even made a Smash, right? You only got one of Demolition before they canceled the LJN line, I think I'm right about that. Hacksaw Duggan, Ted DiBiase, Billy Jack Haynes, Slick, Ken Patera, Vince McMahon, Rick Martel, Bam Bam Bigelow. Now, that's a pretty good-looking mold there. Honky Tonk Man, Hulk Hogan in his white shirt. I think that's worth a pretty good little penny nowadays. And One Man Gang. And then I guess you got the newest wave pictured separately down here. We've got a referee. We got Bob Orton. We've got Mr. Fuji, Elizabeth, Fred Blassie. So I guess they got the managers out in this set. Jake Roberts with a snake. Ted Arcidi. Yes, Ted Arcidi. Hercules, the only Hercules action figure ever made. Over at When It Was Cool, I'm coming up here pretty soon. I'm going to have a biography podcast on Hercules Hernandez. And, came to my attention that there's only been one Hercules action figure ever. Mattel's never made one. Hasbro didn't, whatever. It's just LJN. Looks like we got Tito Santana in there, Luscious Johnny V, the British Bulldogs. With belts, by the way, Tito Santana, Randy Savage, and looks like Gene Okerlund in there. So for those LJN fans, that's a pretty good little set. All right, then we got you can subscribe. They had different subscription packages that were pretty interesting. Like you could subscribe to The Wrestler and Inside Wrestling together. And, in fact, I had that subscription at one point in time, so you'd get them in the mail once a month. Both The Wrestler and Inside Wrestling come at the same day. Then you could get Pro Wrestling Illustrated by itself. And then here you have the quarterlies. So four times a year you would get like Wrestling 89 or Wrestling 90, whatever year it was, Wrestling Superstars. And these were glossier magazines. So you get 8 issues a year altogether. And that would be $14.95, so I guess a pretty good little savings there. All right, table of contents, more subscription packages. This is the one for Inside Wrestling and The Wrestler, so this is the one I probably had. So this was the best deal, in my opinion, because you got 24 issues a year, 2 a month, and it was $29.95 to subscribe to a whole year's worth of Inside Wrestling or The Wrestler or both magazines together. All right, Sincerely Yours, this is the letter section. I presume almost all these were kayfabe. I always like to look through and see if I see any names because I've been doing wrestling newsletters since the 1990s. You would think I would run across some of these people at some point in time. I think very rarely have I ever recognized a name, so I just assume these are made up. Brian Worth from Neenah, Wisconsin, if you're out there, please let us know. Jim Bradley of Jackson, New Jersey. Both of them are talking about Larry Zbyszko, of all people. I can't imagine two people in 1990 caring that much about Larry Zbyszko, but whatever. Larry Hodds of Jackson, Tennessee, right up the road from me. That's not that far. Steve Manzi of Ontario. Yep, I don't recognize any of these names whatsoever, so we're going to presume they're not real people. Editor's Notebook, Stu Sachs, the editor-in-chief. He says, brace yourself. If you read magazines and newspapers and watch TV, which covers just about everybody, you're about to get hit by a ton of decade retrospectives. It's bad enough when a year's winding down. Now we have a whole decade coming to an end. Just imagine what's going to happen in 1999. Well, the wrestling world would be an utterly different place in 1999. This thought came to me after editing Bill Apter's story, Rock and Roll Revival, Morton Gibson's incredible comeback in this issue. Why? Because I started to think about who is the tag team of the decade. And that is a pretty strong question for the 1980s, right? Think about who all that covers. He says it's probably the Rock and Roll Express, not the Road Warriors. I don't know. You know, I don't know that it's either one of them, actually. I would probably say the Road Warriors above the Rock and Roll Express. Midnight Express is in there also. You know, Heart Foundation, British Bulldogs. I mean, there's like a billion potential, you know, not to even mention what's going on over in Japan. So who knows? That's a great question, though. Probably not any of these folks. But anyway, he goes on to kind of give a little bit of play about, you know, the credentials of the Rock and Roll Express, four-time NWA World Tag Team Champions. They won the Mid-Southern Tag Team titles, which, again, was the After Mag's made-up name for the Memphis area. They were never known as Mid-Southern Wrestling, but that's what they always called them. So this is just his take on the Road Warriors versus Rock and Roll Express, who was better in the 1980s, and I guess it just all totally depends on what your definition of that would be. Then we get yet another page. This is our third page of please subscribe to our magazines here. Special Christmas offer where you can choose. Okay, so here are all the names of all the different After Mags that were at any point in time on the newsstand out here. Pro Wrestling Illustrated, that's one. The Wrestler and Inside Wrestling, so that's three. Sports Review Wrestling, that's four. Wrestling 90 and Wrestling Superstars, that's six. So these others are, I guess, combinations. Oh, and they had just started Pro Wrestling Weekly, which was their version of a newsletter. Yes, it was mostly kayfabe, a little bit not kayfabe. The news was a lot quicker to get there, and it was a weird format. It was not like a, think of the Observer, you know, you flip through the pages or whatever, the Torch or whatever. This was a giant, like, poster size thing that folded out. Like, you read the page. It was really weird how they printed this. I don't even know how it's possible to have printed this deal. But I had a subscription for a little while to Pro Wrestling Illustrated Weekly, and I realized it was really a waste of money. All you were doing was getting stuff you already probably knew a little bit quicker. And once I discovered the newsletters, the Observer and the Torch and all that, it was game over for Pro Wrestling Illustrated Weekly. But interesting, it's a lot of magazines here, and this wasn't even hot. I mean, the magazines had peaked 3 or 4 years before this, really. Top Secret, Behind the Dressing Room Door by David Rosenbaum. And it looks like he says, you can keep WrestleMania and SummerSlam, the two best events on the WWF calendar, the Survivor Series, and the Royal Rumble are right around the corner. And I think that's true back in the day. I mean, WrestleMania, yes, was their marquee event, always has been, probably always will be. SummerSlam definitely up there. But I can remember back in the day really looking forward to Survivor Series and Royal Rumble. And why? Is because you got more people on them. You got to see more people that, featured on there than at these other shows, because you had the big Royal Rumble match. So you had, 30 people or so in that match. The Survivor Series back then were teams of five, so you had 10 people per match. Sometimes they do tag team matches to have 20 people out there. So you had these giant matches with all these different people, all these different personalities. And back then, I mean, for the most part, you didn't get it on pay-per-view. I mean, the pay-per-view, yes, was definitely a thing. If you lived in the metropolitan area, you probably got it. But in 1990, there was still more people than not that were having to wait a couple months and get this thing on VHS tape from their local video store. That's how I got it. You know, it was, it'd be 2 or 3 months down the road I'd get to watch, Royal Rumble. So you wanted to see all these different people, as many people as possible, so you got more bang for your buck. It's kind of like the way I had grown up reading comic books, and so that was sort of the same deal with like the Avengers and Justice League of America. You know, you got, I bought those with what little expendable money I had because you got more people in them. You know, buy Batman, you just had Batman. Buy Superman, you just had Superman or whatever. You buy the Justice League, well, you get all of them and more. You know, Green Lantern, Flash, whatever. Same thing on the Marvel side for Avengers. So I always liked these larger events that had more bang for your buck. We get to page 11 and we have, yes, yet another, please subscribe to our magazines, the Wrestling Monthly, different from all the rest. This is trying to get you to subscribe to Sports Review Wrestling, which was, you know, one of their quarterly deals. So again, I think we're up to like four different in-house ads just to get you to subscribe. On the Road with Craig Peters, and this is sort of your, you know, generic news article. Terry Funk is a very troubled man. Of course, you knew that already. Everybody who's followed even a fraction of Funk's war with Ric Flair knows that the Nature Boy is dealing with an utter madman. But there may be slight hope for Funk, and that's something you probably didn't realize. On a recent installment of Funk's Grill, Funk had a message for all the young children viewing the program at home. Don't try this at home. He was referring to the incident at the Clash of Champions 8, Fall Brawl 89, in which he attempted to suffocate Flair with a plastic bag. All of which leads me to ask the basic question. If Funk is so concerned about his actions, having an impression on children at home who are watching him, and a qualified thumbs up for that, by the way, since too many wrestlers don't have that concern, then why would he go out and attempt such a sadistic deed in the first place? For that matter, why would he do half the stuff he does in the ring, much less out of it? So you can kind of see the what they're doing there. You know, it's kind of very, very kayfabe-oriented stuff. Now, one thing is kind of interesting in this article is it's one of the later mentions of the AWA. The AWA is very close to folding up shop at this point. And Craig Peters mentions it in his article, or mentions AWA in his article. The AWA doesn't get any respect. Big news, right? It's a shame in a way because they have some extremely talented wrestlers there. Men like Mike Enos and Wayne Bloom, Paul Diamond, Johnny Stewart, who could hold their own in any federation. Well, turns out not really. But somebody has to be the number three to the WWF and the NWA, and that's a difficult position to assume, no matter how healthy the talent roster or television product. But there are some new ideas coming to the AWA, and you know probably what's coming, one of the most utterly ridiculous, biggest fails of an idea ever. But, hey, they were trying something, right? The Team Challenge Series. Craig Peters says, this is a step in the right direction. Well, as it turns out, not really a step in the right direction. What happens is this. Three teams, listen how convoluted this is, try to keep up. Three teams, each comprised of 11 wrestlers, rule-breaking and scientific, chosen from a blind draw, will compete weekly for points. At the end of the year, the top two teams will compete in a $1 million tournament. Home video and pay-per-view events are planned throughout the first year of the series. First of all, AWA hasn't made $1 million ever. Well, since in several years, they haven't made $1 million. They're not going to do home video or pay-per-view events for this at all. That's all dead and gone. Anyway, the team concept will mark an exciting new era for the AWA. But one man who won't be around for that era is Greg Gagne, who recently announced his retirement. I'm sorry to see Greg has called it quits. Frankly, his career has been one of severe ups and downs over the past few years. Rambo Greg Gagne was as unable to capture the AWA World Heavyweight title as was High Flyer Greg Gagne. Nevertheless, Greg had become a fixture in the AWA and perhaps had been taken for granted by fans and promoters and the press. He claims otherwise, but deep down I'm sure he is disappointed he never captured the world title. His dad claimed 9. Of course, he owned the promotion. Let's don't mention that. I'll choose to remember Greg Gagne, the sportsman, who had to be pushed to the farthest limits before even considering bending the rules. I'll choose to remember Greg Gagne, the gentleman, who sent me a videotape message of congratulations shortly after my daughter was born in March. Greg Gagne has retired, and the AWA won't seem quite the same. Well, the AWA won't be around very long to seem anything, quite frankly. We get, I guess, our fifth in-house ad to subscribe. This time they're trying to get you to subscribe to Pro Wrestling Illustrated. A year's worth of that's $19.95, so money well spent. All right, names making the news. This is their, you know, by the time this hit the newsstand, this news was 2 to 3 months old, but whatever. Greg Gagne is retiring, as we just talked about. That's your first news bit. Randy Savage has a problem in his corner. Her name is Sensational Sherry, and ever since she became Savage's manager after WrestleMania 5, the Macho Man has been in a deep slump. He's been humbled, it says, by Hulk Hogan several times, including twice within a remarkable 16-hour period recently, and has been pinned by Brutus Beefcake several times and also by Roddy Piper. Yes, you can see where that's going. It says another second-generation star is gaining attention in the squared circle. I kid you not, this is their words, not mine. Another second-generation star is gaining attention in the squared circle. Coconut Kid, Tio Samoa. Yes, the son of veteran Coco Samoa. Tio recently received a match against Florida champion Steve Kern, but lost by Steve Kern piledriver. I wonder how much Coconut Kid Tio Samoa had to pay to get in this magazine. Blackjack Mulligan is back in action in wrestling for Pro Wrestling from Florida, the former FCW. Blackjack is teaming with his son, Kendall Windham, and plans to go after the tag team champions, the Nasty Boys. Here's a name you probably have never heard, myself either. Mark Tindler is promoting cards in the New York, New Jersey area under the banner of the United Wrestling Stars. And the theme to these cards, hold on to your hat, is Say No to Drugs. All right, here's another. Who even is this person here they're talking about? Like, where is like, I know there's like 5,000 Harts, but who is Hugh Hart? Bad Hugh Hart. The black sheep of the Hart wrestling family in Calgary is out to get his uncle, Stampede promoter Stu Hart. It seems as if Stu and his brother Lou Hart never got along. Are these even real people besides Stu? Like, really, is Lou Hart and Hugh Hart, am I being aftermagged here, really? Hugh's team, the Black Hearts, are after the international tag team belts held by Sumohara and Benkai Sasaki, the Samurai Warriors. They've got to be making everybody this up. Hart has also signed Brett Derringer and Matt Derringer to feud with Bruce and Owen. Those two are at least real people. And managing North American champion Larry Cameron, also a real person. Kerry Von Erich has taken aim at the CWF champion Dennis Condrey. Oh, so this is Kerry's time down in Continental, which was an utter flop. Man, he was in bad shape down in Continental. He was having some Kerry issues. And Dennis Condrey was the tough guy champion using Jake Roberts' DDT to win all of his matches. It was a bad time for Kerry. Tommy Rich appears to have lost his chance to dethrone U.S. champion Lex Luger. So that's happening over in the NWA. Nord the Barbarian won an 11-man battle royal in Portland by eliminating Carl Stiles, and nobody cared. Hurricane Hugo had an effect on wrestling. Several cards were canceled, including the WWC's anniversary show. Well, so the Hurricane Hugo was a very, very big deal, one of the stronger hurricanes ever to hit the United States. It certainly was devastating for Puerto Rico. I'm not surprised by that. The CWA title was held up because of controversy regarding the identities of Texas Dirt and Dutch Mantel. Now, prepare yourself. They are suspected of being the same person. Imagine that. Imagine that in pro wrestling. The tournament for the vacant AWA World Tag Team title was scheduled to be held just days after press time, and we'll have complete results next month. The Destruction Crew, Mike Enos and Wayne Bloom, are heavy favorites. They would ultimately, I think, actually win the tournaments, I think. Did they win the tournament? I don't remember. I don't think they did. But they go on to become the Beverly Brothers up in WWF and really had an unremarkable career, quite frankly, after looking like a pretty big deal there for a little bit. All right, more Memphis news dealing with downtown Bruno. And so here's some Japanese news. This should be interesting coming from the Apter Mags, which never covered Japanese wrestling. Antonio Inoki, who was recently elected to public office in Japan, refereed a match between Big Van Vader and Bam Bam Bigelow. AWA fans should look for Vader in the upcoming Team Challenge series. Can you imagine? Of course, Leon White got his start there in the AWA, and there was talk around this time of him coming back with some version of the Vader gimmick to the AWA, but as it turns out, that never happened, and luckily to Big Van Vader, it didn't, because Lord Almighty, his career might have went down with the ship with that one. Fans of every federation should look for Bigelow, who knows where he's going to show up next. And he definitely flip-flopped a lot between Japan, WWF, and WCW in the 1990s, and ECW. I mean, he was, in fact, just about everywhere. Rick Rude is now taken to insulting entire cities. Who even cares? Tom Zink hasn't been getting a great reaction from NWA fans. Zink, who was extremely popular in the AWA and WWF, has been booed. "I don't understand it," Zink said. Maybe he should confer with Rick Steamboat, who was also booed by many NWA fans. That was, I guess, after Mag's way of trying to be newsletter-ish there. Let's see here. Veteran wrestler Eduardo Perez died on September 7th in Tampa, Florida. Perez, 61, was also known as the Argentinian Bull. And so that's your news from the After Mags. Like I said, not just exactly groundbreaking stuff. The Insider by Eddie Ellner. He was their heel rider, and it's usually, quite frankly, it wasn't just cutting-edge stuff or anything. He wasn't, I never thought, particularly that funny, but people, I guess, talked about him. Yes, another house ad. Collector's Extravaganza, where they're trying to sell you the year-end issues of PWI, the anniversary spectaculars, and the supercard issues for $5 each. And those were pretty good magazines, actually. You did get a lot of bang for your buck with those. If you find those on eBay, they are worth having. On assignment by Liz Hunter, who I think was a fictional human being also, has more Rock and Roll Express goodness. They're really pushing Rock and Roll Express in this one. Another house ad, but this one's for videotapes. Of course, you know they long claimed to be, hey, we put out the first ever videotape that was Pro Wrestling Illustrated's Lords of the Ring. It had clips from the Texas Stadium show with Kerry Von Erich and Ric Flair, and also clips from Starrcade 83, along with some Memphis stuff as well. So that's offered here. $39.95. That's actually a pretty good bargain by 1990s prices. Pro Wrestling Illustrated's Ring Masters. That was a tape, actually, of the 1985 Great American Bash. They have one here I can't even say the name to because it's a slur. Yes, they literally used a racial slur in one of their videotapes from Japan. I'll leave it to your own imagination because I'm not about to say it, and it's from the ladies wrestling groups over there. Rite of the Rising Sun is another one, and companion to that, less said the better. The Von Erichs Front Row Ringside was a little docu-series, I guess, about the Von Erichs. It's had a lot of world-class footage. And then, as a bonus, you get the family album of the Von Erichs. And, wow, what a depressing story that is. Of course, we got a Von Erich biopic movie coming out, I guess, next year that's getting a lot of talk. Where are they now? So this is takes four wrestlers from the past and tells you what they're up to. This one covers Bobo Brazil, Buddy Roberts, Mr. Wrestling 2, and Randy Rose of the original Midnight Express fame. The Bobo Brazil, the former U.S. champion, was the sport's first black superstar. None of that is true, but they like to push that narrative. Headlining events all over the world from the late 1950s through the 1970s. Amazingly, not only does Brazil continue to wrestle, but he's the reigning Michigan State champion. Yeah, he's working indies at this point in time. Buddy Roberts, long famous as the third member of the Fabulous Freebirds with Michael Hayes and Terry Gordy, now makes his home in Chicago. And I think he's actually doing indie work up there, especially for like Windy City Wrestling. Mr. Wrestling 2, controversial fellow, another veteran, continues on with his career, preferring to compete in his home state of Georgia. He's appeared on several independent shows there as well. So you see where this is going, right? Randy Rose, the former member of the original Midnight Express with Dennis Condrey, has left the NWA, recently made a successful tour of Japan. I don't know or think that's true. He's also wrestling in several independent groups as well. The Inside Wrestling Capsule profile is on one Dennis Condrey, who, as I mentioned earlier, is the top single star there for Continental. We get another house ad, but this one's for Roller Games. Now on sale, Roller Games magazine. I'm sure that was a big hit. News from the wrestling capitals. This is like, this was always weird. It was wrestling results, but they never gave you the date. Like, you had no idea when this actually happened. From Poughkeepsie, New York, we have a WWF show. No idea when. Bloomington, Minnesota. Like, they wouldn't even call out the organization, so you just got to kind of figure it out. This also looks to be WWF. St. Louis, Missouri. We got Ric Flair versus Dick Slater. Again, no dates. Louisville, Kentucky. And this is like a Memphis show, looks like. Yet in Memphis, Tennessee, it's a NWA show. Wildwood, New Jersey is an independent show. You had David Sammartino versus Nikolai Volkoff. Other bouts. Let's see if we know any of these people. Tommy Towen defeated Chuck Williams. Well, Chuck Williams, well-known guy. Joey Maggs beat Davey O'Hannon by DQ. So we know both, heard of both of those before. The Monks. I wonder if that's the future headbangers. I wonder if that's who the Monks are. Defeated The Cream Team by DQ. I'm not even making that up. Let's just move along. The Cheetah Kid. That's Rocco Rock of Ted Petty of the future Public Enemy fame. Defeated James Lundos. No relation to Jim, I'm sure. Matt Brock's Plain Speaking. This was a Matt Brock was your fictional old grizzled veteran writer. They did this kind of, you know, gimmick where he's the old guy there. He liked the old stuff. Or it was actually Bill Apter writing in her pen name. So it's usually a utterly skippable article there. Here's your house ad for Pro Wrestling Illustrated Weekly. Hot off the presses, it says. You get weekly information, so it's not as outdated. Here's our big feature article, Rock and Roll Revival, Morton and Gibson, Incredible Comeback. The press said they were dead. I don't think they ever said that, but the fans mourned their departure. Only Rick Morton, it says here, and Robert Gibson knew what everybody else waited to find out. The Rock and Roll Express is alive and kicking, and now they're wearing the CWA tag team belt. So, yeah, they go do a little jaunt through Memphis, and they actually come back to the NWA for a little while. Got a little bit of push, probably more than you remember there in the early 1990s before finally they end up. So actually, Robert Gibson got his knee hurt pretty bad, and so that necessitated Ricky Morton being on his own for a while, and ultimately, of course, he ends up with the York Foundation as Richard Morton, and a little bit of change of pace from him. That didn't work quite as well as Terrence Taylor and some of the other ones they tried. Michael Wall Street is Mike Rotundo, Captain, my Captain, I'd like to call him. We've found him, the man who can defeat Hulk Hogan, and guess who it is? It's Stan Hansen. Of course, we know in Japan they had a big super show over there, and Hulk Hogan beat Stan Hansen. But, man, Stan Hansen against Hulk Hogan in this time period, that would have been great if they could have got him over there to WWF for a while. Why Sting's friendship is tearing Ric Flair apart. And this is, I always hated these utterly kayfaberific articles that brought nothing to the table here. NWA champion Ric Flair and Sting have formed a strong alliance over the past few months, but Flair doesn't want he and Sting to become too reliant on each other. And these, like I said, these articles brought nothing to the table, nor did Jake Roberts versus Ted DiBiase, cold-blooded obsession. Ted DiBiase might have made the biggest mistake of his life when he claimed to have ended Jake Roberts' career. Within weeks, Roberts came off the sidelines to make a run at the million-dollar man. Now, each man has put his career on the line for the blood of the other, and this feud was almost certainly over by the time this magazine hit the stands. I always liked the fake interviews they did in here. Like, for years, I had no idea. I suspected these were fake interviews, but some of them you could obviously tell were fake interviews. This one is on the hot seat. It's Paul E. Dangerously. Yes, your modern-day Paul Heyman. He says, I'm too dangerous for the NWA, and I guess it's written in the voice of Paul Heyman, and it's all totally in kayfabe and totally ridiculous by today's standards. There's a lot. You get your Lawler versus Emery, the King of Memphis versus the King of Texas article, as USWA is at this point in time, of course, split between those two areas. Jerry Jarrett has bought out the former World Class and is trying to make a go of it after failing to buy the AWA. Jerry Jarrett had tried to buy the AWA, and I was so wish that would have happened. That would have made so much more sense, but Vern Gagne wasn't having it. He wanted Greg Gagne to have a role in there somehow, and Jerry Jarrett had enough sense not to let that happen, and the sale never went through. So there you go. This month in The Wrestler, we get a promo of what that's going to be, an exciting exclusive, the Hulk Hogan Book of List, and in Pro Wrestling Illustrated, will Ultimate Warrior's next victim be Hulk Hogan? So trying still to get Hulk Hogan as many of these as they can. Your one-on-one was supposedly an argument or an interview between two people, like a roundtable discussion, I guess, between two wrestling personalities. Again, an utter waste of time because it's utterly scripted in character. This one we have Sergeant Slaughter arguing with Colonel DeBeers. Like, there's not even really a good chuckle to be had in here. It would be great if they worked like some inside jokes in or something, but it's really written for about a fifth grader, and it's really, you know, kind of dumb. The back half of the magazine is pretty much the conclusion of most of those articles. Remember how they used to split them up? It'd say continued on page 55, and you'd have to, you know, flip through 20 pages to get to the conclusion of the article you were reading. But then we get to what I always thought was the main event of this here magazine. By the way, there's a 2-page spread of from the Wrestling Ring, which is a, you know, wrestling wholesale company, of Nintendo games, and this is awesome. This was the old original Nintendo Entertainment System, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, WrestleMania the Game, Airwolf, Knight Rider. I wonder if they got the E.T. game on here that was so miserably horrible. Platoon. My gosh, you know, selling a Platoon game to kids. That's awesome. Kung Fu. Now, that was a good one. Super Mario Brothers 2 was the cutting edge game at that time. Super Mario Brothers 2. So that's awesome. All right, so Inside Wrestling's official ratings. This is what I always turn to first. Let's see who's who. I always was a mark for the ratings for some reason. Your top 15 is a culmination of everybody. Let's just see who's in the top 5. Hulk Hogan, number 1, Ric Flair, Ultimate Warrior, Lex Luger, and the Great Muta, who's the NWA TV champion. Wraps up your top 5 there. All right, so in the NWA, we have Ric Flair, Lex Luger, the Great Muta, Sting, and Terry Funk. See if there's any interesting names on down the list. They got Dick Slater in at number 10, Ron Simmons in at number 13, Norman the Lunatic in at 15. That was Mike Shaw. The AWA, okay, this ought to be a cornucopia of has-beens and never was. AWA, number 1, Larry Zbysko. 2, Greg Gagne, who have just been told is going to retire. Number 3, Derek Dukes. He washed out. Number 4, Sergeant Slaughter. He gave up. Number 5, Baron Von Raschke. Always hated Baron Von Raschke. Number 6, Johnny Stewart. He never really did anything past here. Number 7, Paul Diamond. Number 8, Akio Sato. They're going to be in the WWF very shortly. Paul Diamond originally just as an enhancement wrestler, but he will ultimately replace Akio Sato and Pat as Pat Tanaka's tag team partner there in the Orient Express. Kokina Maximus is your future Yokozuna. The Russian Brute, who may be one of the most terrible wrestlers I've ever seen in my life. Oh, my God, that guy was terrible. The Unknown Soldier. I've no clue who this guy is. I vaguely remember this gimmick. 238, parts unknown. I'm going to have to go back and revisit, see if I can find out who the Unknown Soldier was. Let's just go to Google. If only I had a machine that would tell me this. I know I'm going to get the comic book, I'm sure. The Unknown Soldier, AWA Wrestling. Let's see if we can find out who this is. Was this? Oh, it was Mr. Saito, actually. Okay, so Mr. Saito is actually going to win the AWA Championship. So I guess that was a gimmick they were doing with him. All right, good deal. Learned something there. Mike George, one of the most boring people I've ever saw in wrestling, number 12. Ken Patera, then Mike Enos and Wayne Bloom. The WWF has Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior, Randy Savage, Rick Rude, and Dusty Rhodes as your top five. Let's see if there's anybody interesting down through there. Nope, pretty much everybody you would expect. The tag teams, here's your tag team. Again, they would mix everybody together in this from all the different organizations. Number one, they have this era's Freebirds, Michael Hayes and Jimmy Garvin, who are the NWA Tag Team Champions. Number two is Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson, who are the WWF Tag Team Champions. Number three, the Road Warriors. They consistently kept them rated high. Number four, Demolition. Number five, the Skyscrapers. Number six, yes, the Bushwhackers, believe it or not. Number seven, Midnight Express. I'm presuming this is Bobby Eaton and Stan Lane and not the original Midnight Express. Mike Enos and Wayne Bloom in at number eight. Number nine, the Rock and Roll Express. Number 10, straight from my territory, Continental, Jimmy Golden and Brian Lee. All right. So that's pretty much the Roll Call of Champions. So where you had all your different champions. A star by their name indicated the belt had changed hands since last issue. We've got a few of those. Let's take a look at our new champions here. Let's hit the high points here. Let's see here. Because there's a bunch of these. Like the All-California Championship Wrestling Champion. Do you even care that that's Don Morocco? Have you even heard of such a thing? Me neither. The All-Japan All-Asian Tag Team Champions were Dan Crawford and Doug Furness. So that's pretty good. The International Tag Team Champions were Stan Hansen and Terry Gordy. The AWA World Champion was Larry Zbyszko. Continental Champion, as mentioned, Dennis Condrey. Let's see here. The CWA Tag Team titles had changed hands since last issue, and this was the Rock and Roll Express. They beat Chris Champion and Mark Starr. The IWGP International Tag Team Championship had changed hands. And this is like, I don't understand what's going on here. They have literally two teams listed. It says here, IWGP International Tag Team Champions, Masa Saito and Shinya Hashimoto. And then right beside it, it says Riki Choshu and Takayuki Iizuka. I guess they were the former champions because they're listed as former. I guess they, when they were doing this, Quality Control missed, the editor missed this. They should have took that name off. So Masa Saito and Shinya Hashimoto had won these belts. The NWA TV title had changed hands. The Great Muta is your new champion. He beat Sting for the held-up title September 3rd, 1989. NWA World Champion was Ric Flair. Also changing hands with the Pacific Northwest Championship, Scotty the Body, who is your future Raven, won a tournament over Carl Stiles. The Pacific Northwest Tag Team Championship also changed hands. The Southern Rockers, Rex King and Steve Dahl, had also won the held-up titles in a tournament. And actually, that's all the belts that changed hands since the previous month. Your NWA U.S. champion was Lex Luger. The USWA champion was Jerry Lawler. WWF champion was Hulk Hogan. Tag team champions are the Brain Busters, Blanchard and Anderson. And, yep, that's your Roll Call of Champions. Always greatly enjoyed that. The Blast from the Past this month in wrestling history says a scientific symphony. Dory Funk Jr. versus Mil Máscaras from November 21st, 1969. And so, yeah, good old Boring Funk Jr. makes a return to our show here. And that's it. Your back page is the full color order, your final house ad. You can order Pro Wrestling Illustrated t-shirts, caps, frisbees, bumper stickers, pins, the whole kit and caboodle here from the back page. And then we have one more, the outs of the inside back cover. We got a full cover, a full color rather, advertisement from the Wrestling Ring again. It says they're here, all new 1989 action figures. And so we have new LJN figures here, or at least a few of them. The Big John Studd figure pictured here has been around since literally the beginning. It was one of the first ones you could get. But they have the Ultimate Warrior, Big Boss Man, Ravishing Rick Rude, one of the worst ever. Like, his hands are literally molded to his waist. He is even less than action. He is an in-action figure. The Warlord, Haku. And it says here, interestingly enough, Haku does not come with the crown as illustrated. Interesting. Andre the Giant, this will be the second Andre the Giant mold without the big bushy hair. Brutus the Barber Beefcake, and then, as I said, Big John Studd. So there you have it, 1990 Inside Wrestling Magazine, January 1990 for, the last few months of 1989. And that's what you would have picked up on the newsstand back at the end of 1989. I'd already just graduated high school that previous spring. I had no idea what I was doing with my life, and probably making some bad decisions at that point in time. Certainly not getting rich. I should have started socking away money right then, but nope. I was buying Inside Wrestling Magazine with its stupid kayfabe articles instead. Wish I'd put that money in, let's say, Apple stock or something. That would have been a good idea. Maybe you should put your money in our Patreon page at whenitwascool.com, and that would help me out. That would make up for that I forgot to sock back then. We have over 2,000 shows in our archives and lots of retro pop culture, pro wrestling history, and much more. Check us out at whenitwascool.com. Hit that Patreon button, and I'll see you here again soon with another show.
When It Was Cool is your home for retro pop culture fun. We feature hundreds of podcasts on classic TV shows, movies, retro sports, toys, history, music, wrestling, and more. Tons of free podcasts, and hit any Patreon button for a deeper dive into our premium shows. WhenItWasCool.com, fun and friendly.